Kirk Ludicky back with another Scouting Post podcast, as promised from the previous version where I cranked out a review of the top 11 amateur Boston Bruins prospects as of January 2017 per the New England Hockey Journal January 2017 issue with Tim Schaller on the cover. And if you haven't checked it out, there's a pretty good cover story with Merrimack, New Hampshire native and Boston Bruins forward Tim Schaller for our January issue, written by friend and colleague Ty Anderson. I've known Ty a long time, going back to, before the Bruins won their Stanley Cup. So he's been on the Bruins beat a while as a young up-and-comer. If you don't know Ty, check it out. Good story. Did about a 45-minute podcast posted yesterday to the blog. I assume if you're listening to this one, you've probably heard that one. If you hadn't, invite you to listen to both. Going a little more in depth than what I was able to do in print and kind of share some additional insights on the players. We started out with the guys that are not pro, the Charlie McAvoys. Zach Sinishin, of course, was number two, and then our top three for that particular roundup was Boston University Terrier Jakob Forsbacka Carlson. So basically two BU Terriers sandwiching a Sioux St. Marie Greyhound. A lot of offensive potential and balance in your first two players in McAvoy and Sinishin, and then, of course, Jakob Forsbacka Carlson appears to be about as good an all-around defenseman, two-way guy with some offensive upside at the end there, a la kind of Patrice Bergeron. I'm not saying he's going to be Patrice Bergeron, but so many people make the comparison, so I'm comfortable throwing that out there in terms that he's a, he doesn't have great size, but he's a right shot center who's just so smart and can process the game at a much higher level than most of his peers, and NHL teams have the use for that. So what we're going to do on this particular podcast is we're going to break down the guys that are under contract and playing at the pro level somewhere. Most of these players are in the American Hockey League with Boston's longtime AHL affiliate, the Providence Bruins. Providence has been the Boston Bruins' main farm affiliate at the American Hockey League level since the 92-93 season, when they left their affiliation with the Maine Mariners. Providence has been the mainstay for developing Boston's NHL players at the American Hockey League level now for well over 20 years, going on 25, and pretty interesting trivia question, but the very first Providence Bruins player to score a goal was none other than Jim Vesey Sr. As we all know, there was a lot of attention surrounding his son, Jimmy Vesey, and he's with the New York Rangers now, and that's talk about water under the bridge, but that's an interesting little footnote to history there that Jim Vesey, back in the day when he was a Boston Bruins property before injuries derailed what was a pretty promising career for the former Merrimack College standout. He did net the first Providence Bruins goal in team history. And now we've had lots of players come through the doors at the Dunkin' Donuts Center there in Providence, Rhode Island over the years. And I would say that no group as a whole has been more promising than the guys we have there now. And a lot of them hold strong spots in this top 10 that I've generated. As I said on the previous podcast, this list is largely subjective. I certainly do take advanced statistics and metrics into account, but I spend a lot of time talking to sources. I'm talking to players, I'm talking to coaches, I'm talking to scouts and front office types across the Bruins organization and also outside of the organization. I'm not just I don't really have an agenda other than to try to give a good, solid feel for who I think the players are who are going to go on and make it and establish themselves as successful NHL performers with the Boston Bruins or perhaps somewhere else. A lot of what I do to jockey in the rankings and put certain players ahead of others is I try to balance immediate impact and those players that maybe develop early but don't necessarily have that higher ceiling and promise against those that might take a little longer to get there, but look like they have the potential to be, play bigger roles at the NHL level, whether it's, top to middle six forwards versus a bottom line grinder, or top three defensemen versus that bottom pairing specialist guy that might manifest and emerge earlier in his development, and a potential NHL starter with the chops to be a capable performer and carry a team and establish himself, in a position that really there are 30 starters in the NHL, soon to be 31 with the advent of the Las Vegas Golden Knights. So not a lot of opportunities if you wear the pads. So that's kind of where I'm going. So if you're kind of curious at where some of these players are kind of grading out versus others, we certainly have some guys that are up with the Boston Bruins right now that are in this top 10 list. And you might say, well, why is that guy, lower and, closer to 10 than one? Well, there's your answer. They might be, grinding it out and showing something right now at the NHL level, but long-term situation, not sure it's in the cards for them to be, a higher end performer. And they could certainly prove us all wrong and go on and establish themselves in that way. But for now I'm pretty confident and comfortable and sticking with the way I have it. So without further ado, let's get to the pro list. Like I did in the amateur list, we'll start at lower on and work our way back. Again, impressive players. The one guy that didn't make the cut and that might raise some eyebrows, because he is one of those players who got some big league time and did not look out of place, is Sean Corrali. He was acquired in late June 2015, just after the draft, in exchange for Martin Jones. The Bruins got Corrali, and then they got the first round pick from the San Jose Sharks that turned into Trent Frederick this past June. So we're looking at Corrali and Frederick for Martin Jones as part of that larger deal that sent Milan Lucic to the Los Angeles Kings, and the Bruins were able to get the first round pick, which was Jakub Zboril, and then also Colin Miller as well. So the Bruins are managed to flip multiple assets and kind of add that war chest to the Lucic return. We'll see where these guys go. Corrali's a big guy, skates well, plays with pretty good energy and physicality, but there's not much offense there with him. We're certainly seeing that at the AHL level, where he kind of took a while to get on track. Noticed that when Austin Sarnik turned pro and signed with the Bruins, they were teammates at Miami of Ohio the previous two seasons. Entering Corrali's senior year last season, he had been pretty productive scoring goals and looked like he was poised to maybe break it open for 25 or so as a senior. But what we saw was Zarnik was up in Providence for most of last season and turning heads and opening eyes. And obviously he's with the Bruins now. And when Corrali was called on to carry more offense himself at Miami for Rico Blasi and the Red Hawks, it didn't really pan out for him. So what I think Corrali is a good, solid bottom line forward. He can play wing. He can play center. He's versatile. He's got the size. He's more of a defensive presence, and that's fine. But I just don't really envision him magically just suddenly waking up one day and becoming a consistent threat offensively at the NHL level. I mean, he kind of is what he is. And you have to remember, he was a fifth round pick in 2011 of the San Jose Sharks. So it's not like this was a player that was projected to be something early on and then hasn't met expectations. He's probably right where he needs to be. He didn't look out of place, but when it comes to ranking the players that I have ahead of him, I just think that there's potentially more there. I could be wrong in the long run, and Corrali could end up establishing himself as a regular here in Boston or somewhere else. But for now, I'm comfortable having him at 11 and just out of the top 10. So he's your honorable mention. It was close between him and the guy that I ended up going with, but ultimately I stuck with Malcolm Subban in the top 10. I know his stock is down and people are down on him, but you just can't get past his pure athletic ability. From a physical standpoint, Malcolm Subban can come into the NHL and he can stop pucks now. Now, some people will tell you, well, hey, how can you say that? Because his only two NHL appearances have been, you know, I mean, let's say it, pretty rough, and that's probably being charitable. However, having said that, I mean, when he's on his game and he's confident, and he's playing well and he's applying the improvements into the fundamentals and the technique over the years when he was drafted, Subban's a pretty capable player. And we're talking about a player that was a first-round pick. Obviously, if the Bruins could go back and do it all over again, I don't think they make him the first-round pick. It was a luxury pick at the time. It was a curious decision. You know, why take a goaltender there when they didn't really need one? And that goes back to they took the player at 24 that they felt was the best available at the position. But, you know, again, hindsight being 20/20, you can go back and you do the forensics. There were some red flags with Subban, most notably in his technique, because he came to the position later. This is a player who was a defenseman for much of his minor league or minor hockey development and skated out and always wanted to be a goaltender. And so he came to the position relatively late. So he had a lot more kinks to iron out in his game than many of his peers. But, you know, everyone kept going back to just the pure athletic ability and the sheer potential ceiling down the road to be a top-level NHL netminder. And so the Bruins went with it, and unfortunately it is not panned out to date. We don't know what the future holds for Malcolm Subban. I like him on a personal level. I think he is someone who wants to do well and certainly is bothered by the fact that whether it's being outperformed by Jeremy Smith in his first couple years, in the organization, or when he took a puck to the throat last year and ended the rest of his 2015-16 campaign when he was in the midst of playing the best hockey of his career. He's been a slow starter every year, it seems. Just comes out of the gate sluggish and hasn't been able to inspire confidence and trust in the coaches to give him an extended run between the pipes. I don't know how to account for that. Part of that is not his fault. It seems the Providence Bruins have been a bit of a slow starter. Starting team, although last year he was injured and Zane McIntyre had to begin his rookie year kind of thrown into the fire, and we'll get to Zane later. But Subban is, he's not someone you want to just throw away. It's just the Bruins are kind of in a tough spot with him because they you only have so many goaltenders you can develop, and at some point he's going to want to get more of an opportunity than he has received. But right now it's not even a contest in terms of who's playing the better hockey down there, and Zane McIntyre has essentially put a chokehold on the top netminder duties in Providence. And like I said, we'll get to him later, but his numbers are eye-popping and Subban's are not. And if there's been a knock and whispers that have kind of followed Subban over the last couple of years, it's that, you know, he's a good guy, but he doesn't necessarily put the work and had the fierce, dialed in, work ethic that others have. And so it's noticeable to some of the coaches. And again, this is what people are telling me. And this is not, in my interactions with Malcolm, he's been affable. I haven't seen that, but, it's gotta be frustrating for him because he has a different set of pressures on him as a first round pick in 2012, who's expected to go out and be, a major league solution down the road, versus a player that was taken in the sixth round and has just been allowed to be on a very long, gradual developmental curve. So Malcolm Subban is still in the top 10, but I honestly don't know what the future holds. And to be honest, if he were going to be traded, it probably wouldn't be in a standalone deal, but would be like as part of a package to give him an opportunity to go elsewhere, give a team the chance to maybe develop a high-end player who doesn't have any standalone value, but as part of a package, for something, involving multiple players might make sense and might allow the Bruins to sweeten the pot to get a player that they're targeting. So wishing Malcolm all the best. He has improved recently. He's getting a little better numbers-wise, but still a long way to go and no contest right now with Zane McIntyre. He is the established number one in Providence, and he's taking the ball and running with it and putting up some pretty historical numbers. So, again, we'll get to Zane in a bit. He's pretty high up on the list, as you can imagine. Next guy is a defenseman out of Sweden, Emil Johansson. He was yet another prospect that has come out of the very intriguing 2014 Boston draft class. We started with David Pastrnak, and then you had Ryan Donato, and then Danton Heinen, who is someone you're going to see or hear about on this podcast later on. And then from there, after Heinen, you had Anders Bjork, who again is another one that just looks like he has a world of potential ahead of him. And now we have Emil Johansson, who was their final pick that year. So all of those players are in play. We've got one in the NHL. We've got another one that's seen some NHL games and certainly is exhibiting promise. And then there are three more who, you know, aren't just your average run-of-the-mill types that are just kind of treading water or not looking like they're going to make it. Emil Johansson is a pretty average-sized defenseman, but he skates well. Before the 2014 draft and the couple years leading up, he was ID'd early on as a player that had some higher end promise, might be pushing into the top 90. But a couple things happened. He stopped growing and his development kind of stalled in his draft year. And so Johansson kind of fell off the map a bit. You didn't hear about him as much. And the Bruins, you know, did what you do in the seventh round, and they took a flyer on a cat that, you know, had showed some potential early on and for whatever reason hadn't put it together. Well, since then, he's really kind of come on. I mean, this is a player who I was told was, you know, his hockey sense maybe wasn't, and his ability to read and process and react wasn't all that great. And when you added that with his just average size, you know, did not make him a priority target for teams earlier in the draft. But since then, he seems to have gotten better. You know, just based on the feedback I've gotten from sources in Sweden that have watched him at the pro level there, he really improved his offensive potential by getting more involved. He activates smartly, gets up into the play, has got, you know, really confident puck handling skills and a good shot from the point that he's able to sneak through. I mean, Swedish defensemen are hard to gauge just because the numbers that get put up in the Swedish pro leagues and the European pro leagues over there, you can't draw a direct line and a correlation between that and North America. So you have to kind of try to, you know, read between the lines a little bit and see, you know, what's in store. But he had a really strong playoff last year for HV 71, and they allowed him to go on to Djurgården, where he is this year. And I think this is a player the Bruins will probably sign and get a nice value on and on a lower end contract and be able to bring over and work in slowly. But he's just one more player that has promise. He apparently had an upper body injury of late. I don't know the latest status on that. I know he was on the shelf for a bit, but he looks like someone who's increasing momentum, and that's good considering where the Bruins got him. Next on the list at 8 is another Swede. He's up with the Bruins, so I won't spend a whole lot of time with him because you guys are probably getting pretty familiar with him. That's Anton Bleed, sixth rounder in 2013. Interestingly enough, he's the first and as of now only player from that draft class that has made any kind of impact in the NHL. It's looking like a disappointing class. For those of you who may not remember, the Bruins traded their first-round pick that year to Dallas for Jaromir Jagr. It was originally a second-rounder, but it was a conditional pick that if they made it to the Eastern Conference Final or beyond, that second-rounder would revert to a first-rounder, and that's what they did. Unfortunately, weren't able to close the deal against Chicago, but they didn't have a first-round pick, and because they were the Stanley Cup runner-up, they were picking second-to-last in every round that year. And so their first choice, Linus Arneson, another Swedish defenseman who just looked like safe, steady, has really just not come together. And he's currently injured, and it looks like a long-term injury. And he's really looking like he might be a wash and be someone that's going to end up going back to Sweden and never really, you know, amount to much here in North America. You hate to see that, but there's just, you know, some players just don't develop. But so it's a bit surprising that a guy like Anton Bleed, who was kind of considered an afterthought. He was, you know, one of these Boston Bruins type players who didn't really seem to have a whole lot of skill. Hence, he was a late sixth round pick that year. Has really put it together to the degree that he's in Boston and he's already scored his first career NHL goal and has added an assist and is grinding out and doing the things you want on your lower lines. I mean, this is not a high end dude. He's not going to be a high end dude for the Boston Bruins or really for anyone, but he does have value because he's tough to play against. He's an agitator. I look at him, he reminds me a bit of the old Vladimir Sobotka. You know, he's like a Vladimir Sobotka light, just in terms of the style he plays, you know, just, you know, grinds it out, hits people. If he could develop more of an offensive element to his game, similar to the way Sobotka eventually did when he was moved to the St. Louis Blues, that would be a win for Boston. I wouldn't count on it, but you know, Bleed is the kind of player that's gonna keep earning shifts and keep getting put out there because he creates space for his line mates and he makes players opposing players put their head on a swivel and be accountable whenever he's skating around the ice. So I really like that player, and you know, credit to the Bruins for taking a late round flyer on him and then giving him an opportunity to come up and make an impact with the big club. We're still waiting for other players on that draft list to maybe come in and do something, and there are a few that have the potential to. But by and large, that 2013 class has been disappointing to date. At seven is another player that's seen some time in Boston, and another one I won't spend a ton of time on just because you know him pretty well. Townie, Charlestown native Matt Grzelcyk, former captain of the BU Terriers in his first full pro season. He's been healthy after missing a lot of time to injuries over the last couple of years. And, you know, he's undersized, but he skates so well and he's so smart. It took a little time to adjust to the AHL pace and the challenges of the speed game there, but he's really adjusted, you know, from November on, and he's producing more points for Providence. He's playing a larger role on the power play. He's not going to ever score a lot of goals for you because his shot is just kind of standard, doesn't have particularly much power or accuracy or, you know, that lightning quick release that can fool goaltenders. It's not a bad shot, but it's average. He's where he excels is in puck distribution, passing, his vision, his ability to get pucks through a maze of sticks to teammates that are in a prime scoring position, either on the backdoor plays or for one timers at the tops of the circles, things like that. He's just got a real natural touch on the puck. He's able to make any range of pass you need. He can get back in retrieval quickly and move the puck up smartly, and he's not afraid to get up in the play. And so he lived his dream, got a couple games with the team, both on the road and at home, had a huge contingent for, I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock the last 4 or 5 years to not know his backstory, but Dad John is, on the, TD Garden Bowl Gang and just the hockey family that grew up in the shadow of the TD Garden in Charlestown and you know, has willed his way up through the levels of hockey because he is a smaller defenseman and wasn't given a lot of credit early on for having a chance to make it to the NHL. And he's at least on the record as an NHL player now. His big challenge is to figure out a way to get up there and to make it stick the way Torrey Krug has done and others around the league that might not have size, but they have a big heart and they have the hockey sense and they have the wheels and the puck skills to make a difference for their team when they're given the opportunity. At six, we've got another goaltender. Interesting. Again, I've got this player has in my mind is kind of past Malcolm Subban on the depth chart in terms of potential. He may not be playing in the AHL right now, but he does look like long term he might have a shot at developing into a quality NHL netminder in time. And that's Czech goaltender Dan Vladaš. He you know, Darth Vladar. I mean, people say Vladar, Vladash. She's even said Vladar, but really the Czech pronunciation is Vladash. We'll see if he changes that eventually when he comes up and is around the Providence and the Bruins more. But, you know, when you're 6'5" and you have the quickness and the fluid agility and grace he does, that's a huge step up. I mean, NHL teams are looking for those big, massive goaltenders that take up so much of the net but are really quick and can react and make that initial first save. Vladash is he's a bit of a work in progress, a bit rough around the edges. I mean, he's got to smooth out the technique, and he'll do that. The best way to improve your overall game and your long term potential is by playing a lot, stopping pucks, improving your rebound control. I have talked about it before. I mentioned it on the last Three Amigos podcast that there's one thing I'm not really sure about with Vladash. It's how instinctive he is and whether how well he reads the play and can kind of anticipate where the shot's going to come from. That makes it harder if you're an NHL goaltender, because if you're not instinctive and just kind of, you know, naturally reacting and not having to think, or you're just guessing where the shot's going to come from, you know, there are going to be pucks that are going to get by you that, you know, on replay and when people break the film down and analyze it, are going to say, you know, you should have had that one. So that's certainly something to watch, you know, before you get too excited about the size and ask, you know, well, why not bring this guy up? I think he's got a good amount of work left to do at the lower levels, and we just need to let him be down there. Between Tuukka Rask and certainly what Zane MacIntyre is doing, the Bruins can afford to be a little more patient with a guy like Vladash and just let him go. But great kid, just a terrific personality. I remember when he was drafted, we gathered around him and he had an interpreter down there, and they said, you know, he doesn't speak English, so we'll have this interpreter. And he kind of looked at us, and when we started asking questions, he kind of raised his hand and made an attempt to answer the questions in his English. And you know what? His English was pretty darn good, all things considered. And that told me that this is an individual that's willing to do, you know, to kind of step up and handle some. I mean, it seems like a very trite moment to relate something, but some guys, you know, they're capable of speaking English, but they elect to kind of maybe hide behind that interpreter and let that interpreter do the talking for them. And I thought it was impressive that young Dan Vladash, who was technically 17 and hadn't quite turned 18, even though he had that safety blanket there, stepped up to the plate and answered our questions. You know, he wasn't ready to earn a PhD in English as a second language by any stretch, but that taught me something about his character, and it kind of just validates everything I've been hearing about him, that he's just extremely mature and gets along with a lot of people, and the coaches respect him because he's just a good person. So even if the hockey thing doesn't turn out for him, I suspect he'll probably be involved in the game in some level as a coach or a mentor, because he just has this ability to disarm people and just, you know, be a good teammate and get along with folks. And he's sensitive to those around him. He's a selfless kid. So a lot of time for Dan Vladash. Now into the top five, we've got Rob O'Gara. This is a player I've had a long history with, going back to his days with the Milton Academy Mustangs, when he was skating with Pat McNally, who was a former Vancouver Canucks draft pick originally, and O'Gara seems to have moved well beyond McNally in terms of his NHL potential. Gotta love it that Robbie was able to earn three games with the big club at the beginning because of the, you know, some of the injuries on defense and the picture in Boston when the curtains came up on opening night. He's another one of these players that the team has been extremely patient with and been able to develop. He was the final pick of the fifth round in 2011 after the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, and he himself had helped lead Milton to their first prep championship in a long, long time, and he even assisted on the game-winning goal. He just doesn't have a high offensive ceiling at the NHL level, but he's a really good mobile shutdown defender with good size, about 6'4", between 6'4 and 6'5". He's a little light, about 200, you know, he plays around 210, 215 pounds. You'd like to see him maybe be up at 220, but he gets this really long reach, and he's a fluid enough skater. Transitions, I mean, could get a little better. I mean, he's not a blazing skater that's going to jump out at you, but he can certainly stay with players, and he's got that lateral agility and quickness that when players cut across the grain or try to shake him in the open ice or at the blue line, he's able to stay with them and box them out and keep them to the outside and deny them the lanes to drive the net. And that's really what you need. He's not an overly physical player either. He's not this nasty baggage smasher type that's going to go and try to line guys up for kill shots in the open ice. But what he will do is he understands body contact and leverage. He will finish checks. He will pin guys against the boards. He's just got to play a lot, and he's getting that opportunity in Providence. He's come on. Took him a while to get on the scoreboard, but he scored a couple goals in his last 10 games. And, you know, again, very modest offensive numbers. O'Gara is not going to come up and, you know, turn into a legitimate two-way threat at the NHL level. But what he is going to do is stabilize a pairing kind of in a similar fashion maybe to what Brandon Carlo has done. He's a left-shot guy versus Carlo being on the right. So put him with a talented right-shooting defenseman maybe that's more offensively inclined, and you've got a pretty decent chance to not only, you know, generate some speed in the transition game going on the attack, but also denying those opposition scoring chances in your own end with a guy like Rob O'Gara. Great kid, great family. His mom, Christine, dad, Brian. When I took an interest in Rob in his draft year and started writing about him and covering him and you know, kind of pumping his tires in the Red Line Report and in other publications, namely the New York Hockey Journal, they took an interest in me, and they appreciated the fact that I was, maybe onto their son, where others were not as, were not as quick to jump on the Rob O'Gara train. And, you know, not trying to toot the own horn here. It's just the way these things work, though, in the business, is that families tend to remember who believed at the very beginning, who saw the potential first. And the O'Garas reached out to me from the get-go, well before he was even ever drafted, and thanked me for at least recognizing that their son had value and potential. And so it's been a fun journey. And Brian and Christine, if you're listening, you got a great son. I've told you this before. He'll be a winner in life long after he's quit racking up wins for his teams in pro hockey. And I think the Bruins recognize that, and they have valued his character. And he's just a player you can really be happy for, because no matter who he's playing for, he's going to be part of a solution, not a problem. So all the best to Rob O'Gara and his folks from Long Island, who are just very proud of him. They were an Islanders family, but they're a Bruins family now. So it's nice to see. At number four, probably the player that might have some of the biggest upside of anyone down in Providence right now, and that's a Slovak a winger, Peter Cholarik. He's got very good size. Jamie Langenbrunner described him as having the NHL size that you need to compete, and he's strong, can skate pretty well. I think his short area, but like, he's got good skating speed. He's got a powerful stride. And so speed-wise, he's fine. What I think Cholarik could stand to improve is in his initial first couple steps, because, you know, in hockey, it's not just about the speed. It's really about the acceleration and the quickness and the agility to be able to stop, start, change directions quickly, get to loose pucks and all that. And I think, you know, he's probably average in those areas. He's certainly improved since the draft, but where he's dangerous is in his shot. He's got a quick release, comes off the puck like a hand grenade, and fools goaltenders. He's certainly come into the AHL after having spent several seasons in the Swedish Pro League, which is a comparable level to the AHL, and just made a transition right away. Smaller ice surface has kind of benefited him in that regard, to where he's able to get more shots to the net. But Langenbrunner alluded to the fact that it's also hindered him in a way, because at times he's not really playing with the kind of pace yet that you need with less time and space and the smaller ice surface from what he was used to over in Europe. He's a good player, but if you're asking yourself, well, you know, he's got 14 goals, 15 goals at the AHL level, why hasn't he been called up? They just need to see more from him, more of a sense of urgency, more of a willingness to adjust to the pace and pick it up and stay within the range of that game-to-game North American pro pace and grind. It's not quite there yet. And you know what? Just because a guy goes down and is successful scoring in the AHL doesn't mean it'll translate. So what they want to do is make sure he's going to be ready so that if he is called up to Boston, he's prepped and can get out there and be, again, part of a solution and not be behind and lacking in his confidence because he's having to make that adjustment once more. So I don't think the coaches are down on him by any stretch, but they want to see a little more consistency out of him, especially on the back-to-back nights, I'm told, when they're playing those schedules down at the AHL with the bus travel and then, you know, three games in three nights. That can be it can be a bit daunting and tough for players. So a lot of promise. I like Chalaric. I always have, but I don't love him. I think he's one of these players that's, you know, certain fans will get excited about because his stat line looks good and he's got good size and he can really shoot the lights out. I mean, I'm not taking that away from him, but I think overall, all around game, there's just some elements that are lacking. Don't think he's a great fit for what the Boston Bruins like to do. Would love for him to prove this theory wrong, but he's certainly an intriguing player. But if you're asking, well, why is he only four and not higher up? That's why. I mean, if people were pointing to me and saying, look at all the goals he's scoring. And I say, well, yeah, I kind of expected that. I mean, he's playing pro hockey since he's been drafted. I mean, he was drafted out of the Swedish Pro League. So, you know, it's not like he is playing junior hockey or he was playing college hockey and he's coming up and he's a first year pro. He's playing at a league that's very comparable in terms of the skill level and the maturity and the age level of what he was used to in Sweden. So, you know, it's kind of like you want to give him credit, but at the same time, let's not overplay the hand and put too much stock in what he's done. The Providence Bruins are certainly happy and will take it, but I think Chalaric's got some growing to do. So let's not rush the shiny new toy up to the lineup. Let him continue to play. And you know what? If he keeps working and improving the areas that they need him to address, don't be surprised if you see him called up at least on a short-term basis as a reward at some point. Okay, number three. Probably controversial, and I think if I could do it all over again, I'd probably move him up, a spot at the very least, and that's Zane McIntyre. I have him at three. He was number two on my pro list last year. Look, he's right. Look, the difference between Zane McIntyre at three and Danton Heinen at one is razor thin. I mean, they're all very close, but what Zane has done since I filed the report back in mid-December is just remarkable. He hasn't slowed down. He's got 10 wins on the season, no losses. His goals against average is a minuscule 1.35. He's up over 95 save percentage. He's just feeling it. He's playing the best hockey, arguably, of his career. And that's saying something, considering that he won the Mike Richter Award as a junior at University of North Dakota. He's won top goaltending awards at every level going back to high school. And if he keeps this up and isn't recalled to Boston, you'll probably see him copping top AHL goalie awards, or at the very least, you know, earning an all-star nod at the end of the season, just because, I mean, he's kind of like that. What Frank Vatrano did offensively for the Bruins a year ago, Zane McIntyre is doing it in net for the Bruins. And that's so welcome, because just think where people's mindsets would be if Zane wasn't doing this and given the kind of mediocre and the up and on again, off again struggles of a Malcolm Subban. So McIntyre's got a lot of people fired up. This is a player who ended the season on a rough note a year ago. We weren't sure how he was going to respond. He had a rough time in the AHL playoffs. He was given the start in Game 3 with the Providence Bruins facing elimination. It was a do-or-die game against Wilkes-Barre Scranton, and he got lit up, to put it bluntly. And he'll be the first person to admit that, just did not play well. And the Bruins were kind of concerned. He had an up-and-down season. He was thrown into the fire early on because Malcolm Subban was injured. And he just, you know, instead of giving him that gradual taste of an occasional start and letting him kind of feel it, he was playing every night, which was, you know, good. I mean, you know, obviously a player like Zane McIntyre wants to get a lot of games in. But he had no pro experience, and that was a lot of pressure to put on him. And so some nights he looked really solid, like he was coming along, and you saw that potential. And then other nights he was shaky and lacking in confidence. And he had some, he's always had some technique issues that were exposed a bit by the AHL shooters a year ago. But the one thing, if he had technique issues coming out of high school, what made him such an excellent player was his work ethic, his drive, and his genuine desire to get better. And he was outstanding in that regard and really worked his way up through the levels to improve the holes in his game. He's not going to ever be your technician, but what he is that battler mentality. He's not a completely unorthodox goaltender along the lines of a Tim Thomas. He's got a little more, you know, butterfly style. He's a bit of a hybrid. I mean, he'll keep his feet, he'll go down, he kind of changes it up, but he's got a little more technical foundation to his game. He's done a ton of work with Bob Asenza. But where he excels and is similar to Thomas's, and he plays every shot like it's, you know, it's the difference between a sudden death overtime loss or winning a championship. He just does not quit on a play. He gives it his level best, and he inspires his teammates, and he's just such a good guy. He's been through a lot in his life. If you listen to, I urge you to listen to the latest Three Amigos podcast that we recorded with Zane last week with my friends Dominic Tiano and Reed Duffy. It really sheds a lot of light on him and the blue collar upbringing and the fact that he was raised by not only a single mom but his late grandmother who meant so much to him. And if you listen to him and the emotion with which he speaks about knowing their sacrifices that they made, I mean, they lived in a trailer home growing up because his mom was working multiple jobs to make ends meet, not only for the family, but to keep two goaltenders in hockey because Zane's older sister was a goalie as well and a pretty accomplished one from what I hear. But to just think about the equipment costs, the ice costs, the pressures of having to be, you know, on a travel team. That's another link to Tim Thomas. He came from humble roots and his parents had to sacrifice a ton. You've all heard the story about them hawking their wedding rings so he could play in a tournament. Guys, this is the stuff that builds character. And when you look at a player and you say to yourself, well, he might not be the sexiest looking goaltender when he's out there stopping pucks. There might be times when he's swimming or, you know, he's kind of flailing around. But ultimately, he's getting the job done. And Zane, you know, lived his NHL dream this year when he was called up due to injuries to both Rask and Hudobin. He unfortunately had to come in for Malcolm Subban against Minnesota in a bad situation. But then Zane made two more starts, one in Madison Square Garden, and then again at the Bell Center in Montreal, playing two original six teams. Unfortunately, he's still looking for his first NHL win, but this guy's heart is as big as the sun. And I can't say enough about him. I've known him since he was 17 years old. He's a player that I identified in his draft year as someone that made sense coming to the Bruins and was hoping they would draft him in the later rounds, and they did. And that was exciting. And I've made a point of getting to know him, and I can't say enough about this young man. And if you're a fan of Zane's, you have every reason to want to see him succeed. It's tough expecting him to be Tuukka's backup because he's playing so well. You want him to keep riding that and keep building his confidence. But at some point, if Hudobin doesn't kind of get his level of play up, the Bruins have a nice option to bring up. It's not as simple as just bringing Zane MacIntyre up, though. There are economic considerations, there are waiver considerations, there are expansion draft considerations. So I think we just got to trust the Bruins to do the right thing. And ultimately, Zane has put himself in a position not only this year, but in past years with his work and his commitment to the organization, that when the Bruins feel like he is their best option to improve the team and to keep the team competitive for a playoff spot, he'll get an opportunity. But I think as fans and analysts, we just have to let that play out and let it go. And it's not just this, I can just tell you, it's not a simple matter of, well, he's playing so well at Providence, so let's bring him up. There are other factors to consider, and Don Sweeney and the front office just have to be allowed to make that happen. Okay, getting down to the end here. We're approaching 45 minutes, so I don't want this to go too long. At number two, I've got Jake DeBrusque, 14th overall pick last year in 2015. Bit of a controversial selection because he was projected in the late 20s, typically on most of those public lists. So for the Bruins to get him at 14 raised some eyebrows. There were some other bigger names that were ranked a little higher on those lists that people wanted instead. Look, He was a 42-goal man that year. His numbers dropped off last year because he took a excruciating injury, that has been publicized. I won't go into the nitty-gritty, but DeBrusk came back too early because he wanted to help his team win, and it was well-intentioned, but when he came back, he was far from 100%. It took him a long time to work his way into that. He also got traded, around New Year's to Red Deer, which was good news, bad news, and that, he got an opportunity to play in the Memorial Cup last spring, but he had to adjust to a new team and he got moved around lines. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just trying to explain why the numbers came down. He didn't forget how to score. He's an active, extremely creative, nose for the net type of scoring winger who has the skating ability and the hands and the offensive hockey sense to make something happen. Then he comes to Providence this year because he's a late 96, and so he was eligible to play full time in the American Hockey League rather than go back to the WHL. And he's second in the league in shots, and he's generating all these scoring chances. And the kid was just absolutely snake bit. Puck wasn't going in the net for him, so. You know, that's what happened. He ended up going, being kind of cold and being criticized because of lack of scoring. Well, the last month or so, he's really picked it up. He's got a long scoring streak, I think 6 or 7 games with a point and scoring goals. And he's finally, with players like that, it's about shot volume. And if they're creating chances and they're active and they're involved and they're making things happen, the puck will start going in for him at some point. It's just law of averages. He's not going to put up eye-popping numbers this year, but much rather have him get off to a slow start and then finish strong than the other way around. So Jake DeBrusk has a world of potential. I think he's an excellent prospect. He deserves to be number two, and because he just does things you can't teach, and he's got a little bit of bite and moxie to his game too. So check him out on YouTube. He scored some nice highlight reel goals as well for Providence. Finally, number one, Danton Heinen. This is a player I had a lot of time for when I saw him at DU after the Bruins made him a surprise fourth-round pick. We've talked about that. He wasn't really on anyone's radar, but had captained the Langley Eagles of the BCHL, and good, solid all-around player. He started out as a center and junior, and then he's played both wings, so he's versatile. He's more of a right winger. But he's a left shot, so he plays his off wing, or he can play the left side. He's played 7 games in Boston. It didn't go well for him. He was not ready, and I think a lot of that is on him. He's got to pick up his pace, and he's got to dial up the intensity, and he's got to kind of just stop playing not to make a mistake and just let the natural instincts come. So Don Sweeney had alluded to the fact that he went down to Providence after beginning the season in Boston. He didn't have a lot of confidence, and he kind of reset. It was a reset for him to go down, and he was point per game player and doing very well. So that confidence was kind of ebbing and flowing. Came back up to Boston again, just wasn't able to find, make an impact on the score sheet. So I think they're just going to keep him in Providence and let him develop for the time being and hopefully get that confidence. He'll be ready at some point. This is a really highly creative player. He can make plays on both sides of the stick blade. Puck seems to follow him around the ice. And unfortunately, when the Bruins signed Heinen and brought him out to play pro hockey after his sophomore season ended last year, he was the shiny new toy, and all these people wanted him on the roster. And then the moment he gets there and he's not lighting it up and he's not flitting around the ice making plays and scoring goals or setting up highlight reel goals, people are like down on him already. And that's just the nature of the beast. But just remember, some of the people that were clamoring to have him in the lineup right away without time in Providence were also some of the first to turn on him. It's the fast food mentality. It's that squirrel-like or that shiny object, not squirrel, but that shiny object short attention span where people just, they expect guys to come in and perform immediately at a high level and to be scoring right away. And some players take a while. And so Austin Zarnik is kind of taking a while, but he's providing more offense on a consistent basis for the Bruins of late. And I think the payoff will be worth it if people are willing to wait. So for those that are kind of curious as to, well, why would you have Heinen number one? He looked like a dud in the 7 games. I think people who know hockey and paid attention to what he was doing saw the potential. He's just not ready yet. He's just not there yet. But A lot of potential for him to be a serviceable top six forward. The Bruins like his versatility and they like his potential, so no need to turn on him and give up. So, okay, the podcast's gone over. I am not going to hit 50 minutes today. I made that promise. And so on that note, I really appreciate you listening. I appreciate the support. I hope you found this podcast informative, and I hope you have a great 2017. I appreciate all the support. It's hard to believe I'm in my 18th season of doing this for the New England Hockey Journal. It's been a lot of fun. I can tell you the team has come a heck of a long way from those days when I was writing about Nick Boynton and Bobby Allen and Kyle Wanvig and Donald Chakalos and Seamus Kotick. I mean, I'm not trying to diminish those guys, but you know, quote unquote, was excited back then for those players. And it's pretty silly now to kind of go back and look at some of those early prospect reviews I wrote and then look at history. So history will always reflect a little differently from what we're hoping will happen. But it certainly looks like the Bruins have a nice stable of prospects that will help the team improve going forward. So for the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke. Thank you for joining me. Take care and have a great week.